Welcome to the American Intelligence Media. I'm your host, Douglas Gabriel, and I'm here today with the best researcher that I have ever known, Michael McKibben. Michael, how are you today?
Hey, coming from you, that's a great compliment.
It is because, you know, you and all the researchers you've introduced me to, the hundreds of them all over the world, who work together in unison to do what you have just released, the most amazing, what I would call the footprints of the Rothschilds' control of the British monarchy, is what the way I would put it. And it is shocking because I myself have been trying to trace this map and look for these footprints and these fingerprints in history, but I had totally missed out what the missing pieces, two of the biggest missing pieces, which your research has now put it all in line so we can actually see a timeline of the way that the British monarchy was taken over by bankers.
Yes, it's unmistakable. It's not only a footprint, it's a complete hijack. But they had plenty of accomplices, so this was not them alone.
The amazing list that you have of the founding members of Cecil Rhodes Roundtable, of the Pilgrim Society, of the Imperial Press and the Empire Press Union, and this, what you have been working on now with all these researchers and the staff writers at Americans for Innovation is absolutely incredible. But now it is rounded off so that we can actually see the clearest path that I've ever seen written on the Rothschilds, because there are two people here who don't use the name Rothschild, who are probably two of the most important and most powerful Rothschilds of all time. Matter of fact, it seems as if the two people, I'm not going to say their names, I'm going to let you say their names, because their names are so weird and so hidden that I looked at them many times and never realized they were Rothschilds, let alone that the power that they had came from inheriting Rothschild money. So these were the two missing pieces that are the two linchpins that hold the whole thing together. So can you tell us about Archibald and the influence of these two different individuals that I'm referring to that are in your fantastic expose on the Rothschild control of banking in Britain?
Well, we have to thank the coronavirus pandemic for these discoveries. Do you realize that?
Only in that your miners have been in quarantine for months. You don't let them out until they come up with this stuff. So I don't think it didn't change their lives one iota. And for yourself, I think you probably doubled and tripled your research time. So, yeah, that probably did help, didn't it?
Okay, but besides that, this is truly the fault of the coronavirus that we stumbled on this. And if you'll recall, back when the first we heard of coronavirus happened, in February? We started looking around and we say, what is this thing that they call the coronavirus? And we stumbled on some patents, and we stumbled on one particular patent, which was named the U.S. patent coronavirus, and it was held by the Purbright Institute in the U.K. And I had never heard of such an institute. And lo and behold, it was from Surrey and west part of the greater part of West London, and the Purbright Institute. And we said, what's a Purbright? And we discovered.
That exactly was my reaction. Who cares about a Purbright?
What's a Purbright? And they have an institute stuck there. So what is this? And we, lo and behold, find this organization called the Purbright Institute, headquartered just outside a little village, a posh little village called Purbright in Surrey. And it's not too far from, it's just a stone's throw outside of the UK. I forget the name of the motorway, but it was south of the M4, and knew nothing about it. And we said, what is this? And so we started looking at the actual physical location of Purbright, and we noticed there's a Lord Purbright Hall. And we said, who's Lord Purbright? And that led us to the discovery of this person, the first Lord Pirbright, his name was Henry de Worms. And so we said, okay, who's this guy? And one thing led to another, and we discovered we had opened Pandora's box, because as we then looked at the actual geology maps, the geographic maps around Pirbright, we discovered that even though this was in a heavily agricultural area of West London, it was not being was not under cultivation. And one thing led to another, and we discovered that this was the site, the area south of the village of Pirbright was the site of the very famous hoof and mouth disease outbreak that occurred in 2007 in the UK, where they then had to destroy hundreds of cattle who had caught this. And as we then discovered Henry de Worms, we discovered somebody who was a Rothschild on his mother's side. And he had inherited in 1883 a massive $350 million, today's dollars, fortune from his mother. And then that one thing led to another. And so Henry de Worms was on that list. And he wasn't Rothschild. And as it turns out, he was the deputy secretary of the colonies in the 1880s in England. And one of his members of parliament who was a partner of his was another Rothschild, was Lord Nathan Rothschild. So with that, we've discovered that he used his fortune to pursue many interests, including his interest in Henry Wellcome of the Wellcome Fund, which now today is the largest pharmaceutical grant fund in the world, with Bill Gates' fund being number two. And then we discover, through looking at the Pirbright Institute's website, that a heavy funder of the Pirbright Institute research is none other than Bill Gates himself to this day. And the Wellcome Fund Trust is another major contributor. So then that got us really interested in looking more deeply. And then the other person who was a secret Rothschild, I'll say secret, we have discovered it, but it wasn't well known and not in people's consciousness, is Lord Rosebery. And you said the other name, but I'll call him Lord Rosebery. It's Rosebery. And he was the inheritor of the N.M. Rothschild fortune, because he inherited the fortune of Hannah Rothschild, who was the sole heir of the fortune of his father, which was the N.M. Rothschild and Sons estate. So, and that was over $500,000 in today's numbers. And he inherited that in 1890. And then 4 years later, he became none other than the Prime Minister of England. So this Lord Rosebery was I'm going to call him a closet Rothschild. So those are the two, Henry de Worms and Lord Rosebery.
And when you realize some cool, really amazing things about it, one of them tell us about how he was Christian instead of Jewish.
Yes, Lord Rosebery was Christian, and he had several objectives in his life, and one of them was to marry wealth. And he then married Hannah Rothschild, and they had a son. And as it's turning out, Rosebery held just about every important post you could pick in the British government, and then was eventually made Prime Minister, and that was at a very formative period for the reorganization of the British Empire. And he was definitely the mentor of Cecil Rhodes, and was actually the Lord Privy Council, Lord President of the Privy Council, when Cecil Rhodes was invited to become a member in the mid-1880s. So he was the progenitor, I will say, of the British South Africa Company, where the British Empire was intent on reorganizing itself from a monarchical approach to the economy to a public-private partnership, where the British government would contract with private companies to carry out the functions of government. And their first big experiment was the British South Africa Company, which ended up starting something called the Second Boer War, which then set up a concentration camp in South Africa, where they were doing Burroughs Wellcome vaccine experiments on Boers and Blacks in South Africa. They killed over 60,000 Boers and Blacks in South Africa, and over 14,000 children. We have those confirmed by the parliamentary records. So what we see here is what we are now the victims of in today's world, of this public-private, and I'm using quotes, public-private partnerships, where the government teams up with private companies, which the government people have actually created, to fund their various corporations. And in the back in the day, in that day, we're talking about J.P. Morgan, we're talking about Rockefeller, we're talking Warburg, we're talking all of the robber barons that everybody is aware of in history. But what we did not realize is these robber barons were teamed up with the British monarchy to seize control of the world in a new way. So this was the imperial reorganization of the British Empire into a federalist, fascist system of economy.
You say that so well. Now, have you
decided? It's taken a while. There's mouthfuls.
Well, because what you're doing here is you're exposing what has always been considered a conspiracy theory as true history. And I'm going to walk back and go through those stages that we went through, because I was right there with you going, oh, my heavens. Oh, my heavens. Really? Right. Really? Really? So you were already onto the Empire Press Union. And basically what we were seeing as a type of imperialism that was becoming a corporate imperialism through the Empire Press Union, which was the beginning of institutionalized spying, propaganda, mainstream media, control of all patents, control of everything, basically globalism. So then we kept asking, well, it wasn't just Ruskin or Giuseppe Mazzini who were affecting these Brits that caused this to happen. Who was it? It wasn't just Cecil Rhodes who out of the thin air came up with this, you know, his almost, I don't even know a name for it, that he wanted to be king of all of Africa. He got his own country, for heaven's sakes. Right. He had conducted wars that he didn't care whether the British approved of it or not. And he took Rothschild money to start that, and then controlled all the gold and the diamonds, and then said, hey, we can do, where did Cecil Rhodes get that? So we kept asking that question. And it wasn't until you came up with exactly that path you just described with Lord Purbright, because Henry de Worms, who in the heck would have known this, that Henry de Worms' dad, Solomon de Worms, given a baronship through the Viennese court, because they were the court Jews, as they were called in that time, that isn't a derogatory term, because they handled usury, so they were part of a group of people who were called the court Jews, who were serving the Viennese imperial court, and so they were given a German, you know, name, de Worms, and you thought, oh, well, when you heard the word de Worms, well, of course, that has to be British. It has to be English. It couldn't possibly be Jewish. There's no way that you could imagine that that could have arisen that way. And then when you find out, and this was the key for me when I'm reading this in the last few days, and you're telling me about this for the last week or so, and all the research that has been pulled up from the mines, Henry de Worms' dad went to Ceylon and basically invented the market of British tea. So Ceylonese tea, which we still drink today, I drink it every morning, organic Ceylonese tea, that we can thank to Worms for going there and basically having a plantation for tea. And then out of that, huge amounts of money came that Henry de Worms, as you say, also inherited all this money. And Archibald Primrose, first Lord Rosebery, who was literally, he's got so many titles. At one point, I would like during this broadcast for you to give us his entire name.
I don't have it memorized. I'd have to go get my notes.
That's what I mean. It's like it's these people had so many names, and then their son is called Lord Delamaney. Well, where did let me
interrupt you there for a minute. Let me point out that Henry Solomon de Worms' estate that he ran in Ceylon was named the Rothschild Estate. So they didn't hide it. They were very clear about who their relationships were. And Henry de Worms was very prominent in the Jewish community in London and was given all sorts of awards and titles. And I wouldn't say he was an especially religious person, but because of his influence in Britain and in Europe, he was quite well treated by the Jewish community. Although he allowed his daughter to marry a Christian. So he was always on the outs with the Jewish community in London, by the way.
Well, you had said this before, and this was a big debate between the conclave and all your researchers. You know, why was it that sometimes it was good to be Jewish and other times it was very, very, very bad to be Jewish? And so when you come up with basically this is Zionism. This is Palestine without being Jewish. It's like, yes, Let's just manipulate it as another colony. And that's what you have discovered. Now, it was amazing. I want to just make a sideline here. And the sideline point is a lot of this research came from going into the Rothschild's own personal family history that they give out, that you found and I found, and I only found pieces of it, could never put together a clear timeline. I kept working on this timeline going, I'm never, ever going to be able to figure this out. Why? Because it's like obfuscated, it's conflated, it's almost confabulated, but here's what's for sure. Those little Rothschilds brag, and when they brag, we catch them, and then we can go back in history and say, oh my goodness, well, they said this, but here's what really happened. Because when they're bragging about giving the money for the Panama Canal, or they're bragging about taking the money from Kaiser Wilhelm, and that being the Rothschild funds that they brought to England to basically then supposedly be rich bankers in England all of a sudden. No, it was German, just like the Queen, who the House of Saxe-Coburg-Gotha. She is not British. They say, but her great-great-grandmother was British. No, so what? They were Hanovers. It was the Hanover dynasty. They were from Bulgaria and Germany. They in World War I, the queen had to change it to Windsor. The monarchy had to change it to Windsor because they didn't want people to know that they were essentially German and they were fighting the...
Well, let's be very clear about something. World War I was a war for the Pilgrim Society to seize control of German assets for the Pilgrims and the robber barons. That's really clear to us now. It had nothing to do. We were snookered into sending our boys and men and our soldiers into that war in order for the robber barons of the age, which were all founding members of the Pilgrim Society, to consolidate their power around what we're talking about now. And they didn't have any problem using innocent Americans and Brits and French. Whatever it took was their motto. And it was all about consolidating banking and corporate power.
You have laid out the foundations of Cecil Rhodes Roundtable, of the Pilgrim Society, the Empire Press Union, and shown that they control the Privy Council and that the Privy Council controls the monarchy and that the monarchy is nothing more than controlled by a group of bankers. And you have named them because you've shown that Nathan Mayer Rothschild, Henry de Worms, and Archibald Primrose, first Lord Rosebery, were all together along with 5 or 6, 10 other people plus their subsidiary group who controlled Britain.
Yes.
And Cecil Rhodes was then brought into the Privy Council by Henry de Worms. Holy moly, when you found that document.
And Lord Rosebery.
Yes. So there they are. They have complete control. They're the richest people in the world. They make the monarchy look poor. They control the monarchy. They're the financial advisors to the monarchy and therefore to the Bank of England. And they created the fiat currency odious debt scam for Britain that they're still caught in, and we're caught in, and every central banking system in the world uses that. Well, they use that system. And I when I was talking about the Germans before, I want to make this perfectly clear. When we're talking about these bankers, we've done exposés on these bankers, and we took it to a certain point, and we showed you how the Venetian bankers went up to Frankfurt, and that's where the Rothschilds stole their name and went and got their money from the German Kaiser Wilhelm, and then went to Britain and created Nathan Mayer Rothschild and Sons.
Yeah, here we're talking, let me just put this in time frame. We're talking about 1804, 1805 time frame with what you're talking about. And I want to make a specific point about that money that you said went from Wilhelm to London. And what we discovered is the reason that he wanted to do that was to hide that money from Napoleon. He was trying to preserve his cash, and so he asked the Rothschilds to help him, and that's Amschel Mayer Rothschild, who then did that. He took the money to London, and they then began factoring that cash, and what was one of the first things that they funded? It was the War of 1812 and the sacking of the White House. So we're talking about Rothschilds who have never been friends of America. That is one thing about this discovery that has just incensed me since I learned it, that the War of 1812 and the burning down of the White House and the damaging of the American Capitol was financed by the Rothschilds.
Was focused on getting a national central bank in America under their auspices. And so we had two attempts. They destroyed both of those. And then in 1913, they got the U.S. Federal Reserve. They took control. But of course, during the Civil War, what was that? Well, that wasn't a banking war. That was a war between the North and South, between the British East India Company, the leftover British East India Company, and the leftover Dutch East India Company. Now, unless you understand that the German Jews who had come out of Venice were the biggest bankers in the world, and they created the German Hanseatic League in Frankfurt and Hanover and Hamburg in the northern parts of Germany, where they had very limited sailing capacities because of having warm water ports. So they used the Portuguese. So the Portuguese controlled basically trade and the spice trade in the whole world until the Dutch and the British said, whoa, 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 we're not going to let the Germans do that. We're going to create the British East India Company and the Dutch East India Company. Remember, Cecil Rhodes
French start East
and the French. I always forget to say the French and the East India. Yes, there were others that were also competing, but this came to America, of course. And so, really, the Civil War was a battle between what was becoming what you have described as this, what I call corporate imperialism. It was the fight for who was going to dominate, not by nation, but by banking and by corporate interests that had to do with mercantilism. Right. So we get to see that Mayer Rothschild, Henry de Worms was the result, millions of dollars of the result of selling the world on a spice, Ceylonese tea, right? Nobody drank tea before that, and they didn't do tobacco. And so where is all tobacco controlled out of in the whole world right now? Britain. British American Tobacco. And so when you get Archibald Primrose, that is where your article comes into modern times, because this isn't a battle between the Savoy line of the Spanish who were connected with the Jesuits and the British line connected with the Hanovers, both claiming to be blood descendants of Jesus Christ. So they have this spiritual battle going on between the Pope and the monarchy of England, who claim to be, literally, both of them claim to have certain connections, the Pope through the Spanish line. So these people, what did they do with that? They said, well, we don't need the monarchy because we have the Knights of Malta. And the Knights of Malta is the biggest insider trading group in the world. And what you pointed out in your article, which there are hundreds of things in this article that are just like what we're talking about. We can't possibly get to all of them. But you point out how the British Knights of Malta are quite different than what would be considered the Vatican, the Pope's Knights of Malta. And this is a really big deal, whether people know it or not, because this is the very central battle that has happened in Freemasonry between the Hanover and the Savoy line, between Britain, monarch. Remember, the Queen, good old Queen Elizabeth, is the head of her own church, and the Pope is the head of his own church. So the polarity between the Vatican Bank and the Bank of England couldn't be any more stark or in contrast. So this is what we're dealing with. But when you found out that it literally came down to Henry de Worms, Nathan Mayer Rothschild, and Lord Rosebery, all of whom were so incredibly powerful that it's amazing that they went nuts. They started the Empire Press Union to control the whole world through global propaganda.
You're jumping around in history, but if I could stick with you on the Knights of Malta, the magical year is 1888. And when I saw this, it just blew my mind that Henry de Worms and Lord Rosebery and Lord Rothschild reorganized the Knights of Malta and created out of thin air the Grand Priory of England as one of the five Grand Priories of the Knights of Malta. And we have to go back and go into the context of that. But the bottom line is, it was Rothschilds who reorganized the Knights of Malta and created the Grand Priory of England, which to this day is under the Queen, under the monarch. And that one of Edward VII's first acts in 1902 was to travel up to Skibo Castle and give Carnegie, likely, a Knight of Malta honor. And when we realized that it looks like our Chief Justice, John Roberts, was also given one of these knighthoods, we then realized that these Rothschilds were very clever. They seized control of the Knights of Malta as a way to get inside the Vatican Bank and inside the British monarchy and control both through the Knights of Malta. That blew my mind. 1888, we have the parliamentary records where Henry de Worms, a Rothschild, and Lord Nathan Mayer Rothschild, were doing the bidding of Queen Victoria in creating that English priory of the Knights of Malta. I then realized what was going on here. It was a banking takeover. And they can play games with the British royalty, the peerage system as well, because she can then give out, she or he can give out these honors to anybody they want, because they did not limit it to Christians. They said anybody could be in the Knights of Malta English Priory. Wow.
And this is that special distinction between being Jewish and allowed into the British Knights of Malta.
Yep.
Or being allowed into the original Knights of Malta, which was strictly Catholic.
Yes.
And had its own sovereign nation outside of the walls of the Vatican City. So the Knights of Malta took on the wealth that was left of the Templars and all their properties when the Templars were overthrown by the French king.
Which was massive.
It was the
wealth of the how many crusades did they have? It was the wealth left over from all the crusaders who died, which was a massive amount of money, and that's the history into the modern world.
People may not understand with Freemasonry that it's all based upon the two Johns of Jerusalem, the Saint Johns of Jerusalem, they're called. So that's the John, what they're really referring to is the Templars and the Hospitallers. Mm-hmm. Now, the Crusades had the Hospitallers to give them food and heal them and take care of their medical needs on the crusade pilgrimage path from Europe to Jerusalem. But there were the Knights Templars who were warrior monks, but they, every day's ride, they had a Templar headquarters where they kept gold, and they invented the checking system. So if you were in Paris and you deposited money, they'd give you this kind of a check. It was a kind of a magical Maltese cross that had markings on it.
Encryption. It had encryption in it.
Yes, it was. It was encryption. And they could take that, and if they showed it in Constantinople, then the Templar knight there would say, oh, okay, so you deposited that much money there. You need this much now. I'll give it to you now. And I'll mark now the encryption to show that I gave you that money on this date. And then the crusader would go on. And as you said, what are the 11, 12 crusades? It depends on how you want to cut the pie, but nobody knows how many millions of people died in that movement towards the east, which was all supported by Venice and the Jewish bankers in St. Mark's. Matter of fact, they worked Banco. The word bank comes from the Banco family, which was a Jewish family that worked literally inside of St. Mark's to make loans for war. And they loaned to the Muslims and the Christians, and then they provided them with ships to get them to where they're going. And then when they all died, they kept their money because their money was in the Templar banks. So this was the biggest scam in human history in terms of, I'll hold your wealth for you while you go to war for the sake of the divine, for God, for, you know, liberating Jerusalem. So what happened was all of the royalty had to send one son or the other into the Crusades. So if they joined the Templars, all of their land and all their money went to the Templars. So they got all that money, and they built walled areas around then their Templar headquarters, and they had a bank where the money was there. So that was the beginning of cities.
That was what they called consistories.
Yeah, consistories. And that's the beginning of cities and the beginning of banking. And so, of course, the king of France got jealous, killed the Templars on Friday the 13th, or at least, you know, Jacques de Molay and the people who were left at St. Denis in Paris. But the point is, that's why we have the bad luck of Friday the 13th. But anyway, they killed the Templars, tried to get their gold, but the Templars had already moved their gold to Scotland and other places. So the whole point of this is that the movement of gold is a key factor here. And we've been watching this. And who controls the gold in England? The Rothschild Bullion Bank. Now, I want to get to modern times. And so that is modern times. We can go into the details of what's happening with the movement of gold, and it comes right back to the Rothschilds, whether people like it or not. But let's just talk about Archibald Primrose, first Lord Rosebery, Purbright dude. Because Purbright, as you pointed out, created coronavirus.
That's Dorms. So there's two. Just so we're clear, there are two. There are two people you're talking about. De Worms, is one Rothschild, and Lord Rosebery is the other by inheritance. He's not Jewish. He's Christian. He inherited the N.M. Rothschild fortune of Hannah Rothschild, and then we've got De Worms, who is a Rothschild on his mom's side.
Right. And Archibald Primrose is Lord Rosebery. I just try to make fun of his name, but his name reminds me of Purbright.
Stop it, Douglas.
I get all mixed up. Whether they're a baron, a lord, a first lord, second lord, third lord.
I know.
Oh, and then they change their names, and then the lord is something that has nothing to do with their name, and then they inherit some land, and then that's their new, they're the lord of that land. Okay, crazy system. That's the reason I could never figure it out. But you lived in England, and you put up with all that, and maybe that gave you the insight to be able to get through it. But we're talking about the usual suspects. So Henry de Worms, Lord Purbright, can basically be held personally responsible for starting biological warfare.
That's correct. He was Welcome's sponsor. And he actually funded much of the land that is what is now the Purbright Institute, as well as the Welsh Guards, as well as the there's a military base there, and what we're seeing here is that the group of people that set out to build the modern British Empire had several priorities. One was vaccines, another was wireless technology in the theft of Nikola Tesla's inventions and the setup of the cardboard cutout Marconi. And then they worked closely with the propaganda group and the media. And you know, if I can bottom line this, Douglas, we see the elements now. But what I see is it's always been about communication. And the Rothschilds learned something a long time ago about banking. If they had inside information, knew something before anybody else did, they could make money. And they did it with carrier pigeons. They did it with telegraphy and Reuters. And then they were instrumental in the Marconi setup of the British Empire and the post office and the wireless system, and now the Internet of Things. And it's all about communication. If they can get a leg up, they can make money. And that's what this is about.
And believe it or not, I'm going to bring in Sarnoff and Lieber, but first I'm going to make my nasty remark about Lieber. I'm patting myself on the back because I predicted what would happen with his indictment. Have you heard what's happened with his indictment?
No, I have not, actually.
Oh, they charged him with lying to them. Oh. He told two little teensy, itsy, bitsy, witsy, teeny, tiny lies about the Chinese student program that they had there at Harvard, where he gave away 26 of our top patents on nanotechnology using American money donated there, as well as Chinese hundreds of millions of dollars donated to Harvard. This guy coordinated it all, and his dad was being manipulated by General Sarnoff. Now, I want to characterize what in the old days probably would have happened to a guy like Sarnoff. Sarnoff was a general, and he saw the power of the British, and he sold out.
He did.
Tell us about
that. Way back when he was a kid. Yeah, he was actually, he's a transition figure, because we now know that the Pilgrim Society set up this First Imperial Press Conference in 1909 and then formed the Empire Press Union and then formed British MI6, MI5, and GCHQ. We know all that happened in 1909. And what we were looking for was the transition figure, and Sarnoff is him, because in 1906, he went to work for Guglielmo Marconi in New York, and he started as a wireless operator, and he was actually sitting on the American receiving side of all of that telegraphy that was occurring before and during World War I. And it was Marconi who hired Sarnoff to be one of the chief telegraphy operators in New York. And magically, Sarnoff was there handling traffic at the 1909 conference, and then the events that ended up in World War I by 1914. That was all Sarnoff. Sarnoff was the guy who ended up being there in 1919 when then Under Secretary of the Navy, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, argued that we needed our own version of Marconi, and that's when they created RCA. In 1919, and at that time, David Sarnoff was a general manager and a vice president, and then the president of RCA in 1919 was, magically, a member of the Pilgrim Society. And then by 1929, David Sarnoff is the chairman of RCA, and then he started NBC, National Broadcasting Company, out of RCA, using RCA technology. So what we see in David Sarnoff is the way the Americans were wrapped into this global telecommunications network and made a subsidiary of the British Marconi company. So we see the Brits' hand in the beginnings of all of our media and all of our telecommunication from the beginning, and it's all Pilgrim Society.
And so, that's, I didn't know. That's another amazing thing, that they're, every friggin' one of them is a pilgrim.
Absolutely.
American or Britain, doesn't matter. If they are caught up in the corruption and big money, they are pilgrims.
Exactly.
Now, I want to say about crazy General Sarnoff, and I want you to elaborate a little bit further on this. Crazy Sarnoff believed that the British, in stealing the patents of Nikola Tesla and claiming that Marconi owned them, and then the British lords all fighting over, you know, getting their piece of that pie, that started the whole patent theft that Sarnoff was watching. And Sarnoff, the crazy general who sold us out and went to Britain, became more British than the British, came back to America and took over America's media. He put out crazy stuff saying that the antennas that he was putting up would be able to beam out electromagnetic frequencies that would be the next war. And the next war would only last seconds because there would be one burst of energy and the war would be over.
That's right. We have a full page newspaper article where he's discussing this macabre vision of the future where a person sitting at a wireless transmission location could literally zap the world. And he actually talks about deadly bacilli as one of the technologies that would be triggered by this wireless power. He actually talked about that in 1926. And what we see today Charles Lieber is the end result of Sarnoff hiring his dad to build the wireless satellite part of this technology and radar at the Morristown, New Jersey facility, which is there today. And then we see the next element of that, and the coup de grace piece is his son, Charles Lieber, basically given all of the patents, 65 patents from Harvard, with his name on all of them, that developed nanotechnology that then can handle the viruses within these nanotubes that can then be released at places like Wuhan and can be sprayed out of the sky and can be then triggered by 5G technology. So what we see in Charles Lieber is the end result of the Sarnoff vision that he actually published. This is the battle of the what did they call, what was that H.G. Wells? War of the Worlds, yeah. This picture in this newspaper from 1926 looks like a scene out of the War of the Worlds movie, which I think was actually re-released about that time. So I think that what we see here is these megalomaniacs that had taken over our banking were so sure that they were going to be able to take over that they actually published what they were going to do and told us what they were going to do in these newspapers. And they have, in fact, done it, Douglas. They've done it.
Oh, and they're proud they've done it. Not only that, you have pulled out documents where the Rothschilds in their own handwriting write down the list of everything that we are dealing with as the evil of our day, and it is their agenda. Yes. Now, what we haven't mentioned is Sarnoff is the connecting point, but you blew my mind when you brought in Victor Rothschild.
Yes. Yeah, Victor Rothschild. I can't even remember how we got to him, but we started looking at each of the Rothschilds. So Victor Rothschild is the third Baron Rothschild, and he is the son of the previous Rothschild that was at the 1909 press conference and was a founder of the Empire Press Union and British MI6. And what we see is that in 1971, Margaret Thatcher hired him to do a study on British research and development science across the board. And he issued this report in 1971 that, I'm going to bottom line it, recommended that Britain stop developing these technologies as a government and that they hire private companies to develop these technologies, and that Britain, you would use its cash, i.e., the Rothschild banking money, to hire these companies to build all this technology. And so what we see is Victor Rothschild then proceeded to set up a company called the Biotechnology Investment Limited that by 1981 was the primary funder of biotechnology, and they are called the pioneers of biotechnology venture capital. And we don't see any of these numbers from this organization available to us, because he set up this company as a Guernsey offshore account, and all those Guernsey operations are hidden. But what we saw in one of the Nobel Prize winners that he hired, Sidney Brenner, in his archives, while the financial reports of this Biotechnology Investment Limited, he had, but they're embargoed until the year 2046. You can't get them. But in what they didn't embargo, we saw newspaper articles from 1981 where Victor Rothschild is bragging about this new technology of biotechnology, and he's actually inviting companies to come to him to ask for money. And what we see from those reports is that 97% of all the companies that are identified in the Victor Rothschild investments are in American companies, not British companies. So go figure. He writes the report in England for Margaret Thatcher and then proceeds himself to invest only in American companies. And then we see in one of the reports of somebody that Sidney Brenner consulted, that we see the name of an American by the name of James Blair. And James Blair is a famous proponent of biotechnology in the National Venture Capital Company, National Venture Capital Association in America. And then what we see is he is heralded as this just genius of American technology, but it's all Rothschild money. So what we see is the Rothschild money is behind all biotechnology in the United States. This is disgusting.
It is disgusting. And Sidney Brenner is one of the most disgusting people I've ever had to listen to. And he is the person that we can blame for being able to do
DNA manipulation, yes.
Exactly. Through RNA manipulation, they can do a DNA rewriting, recombinant DNA. This is the man who had infinite money to explore on humans to figure out how to then create these kind of viruses. Now, what do all these things have in common? That the current coronavirus, which we have told you exactly how it was released and who it was released by, Elizabeth, what's her name?
Manningham Bueller.
Former director of
MI5.
Is now the head of the Muriel Animal Institute.
No, she's the head of Pertwright Institute.
Pertwright. And then Muriel moved to China. Pertwright moved to China. Kinetic moved to China. And then they start releasing these viruses in China. Isn't that a coincidence? But anyway.
It's all coincidence, Douglas. You can't believe any of that. It was coordinated.
From the second that Burroughs Wellcome went to England, it was a scam. It was snake oil salesmanship. It was creating pills. But anyway, so we can see from Victor and we can see from Henry de Worms, Lord Pertwright, that they focused on a number of things. And then it's wrapped up in what you had brought through some research that showed that Richard C. Walker created a patent, the Internet of Things, which showed that they'd be able to control you through electromagnetic frequency, through bioweapons, through everything that moved they wanted to be able to control, especially vaccines. So let's put it in a line. Here is what Sidney Brenner, supported by Victor Rothschild and the other Rothschilds, they wanted to create vaccines that sterilize people. That's what they're now finding out, all these vaccines. Right. They try to sneak in sterilizations as well as many illnesses. Why would they do that? Then vaccines are really bioweapons. Well, why would they do that? Well, because bioweapons are connected to pharmaceutical companies. Well, but that's Burroughs Wellcome. But why would they do that? Why would they create?
Or today, GSK, GlaxoSmithKline. Yeah,
exactly, who it is. And so then they'd say, but what about Sarnoff's EMFs? Why would they be interested in that? Well, because they created World War One and Two, because they create famines. And so you say, but why would they want to do any of that? There's only one answer. And it's the number two thing that I've found that the Rothschilds and Bill Gates support. depopulation. Mm-hmm. All of these things, as you said, it disgusts you because these people sit around and they say, how can we kill the greatest amount of people?
You know what, Douglas, the big disconnect, I think, for most normal, moral people is that why would they, just like you're saying, why would they want to do this? Well, I as far as I can tell, it's because they don't share our morality of the sanctity of human life. They don't see human beings as made in the image and likeness of God. And they see humans as people to be controlled and manipulated and to be servants of this vision they have of humanity, which is a very limited view. And it's basically they see humans as consuming resources that they want and they want to control. And so the fewer of us that there are, the better for them in the end, because they have more resources for themselves. That's the morality that they don't see humans as godly creatures.
In a lot of your research, you can't find the books, because in the books you point out that these people literally say, we are white supremacists and we must control the destiny of everyone who isn't an English-speaking person and is white. It is a form of the worst form of totalitarianism that I've ever heard of. And it's so.
Well, and the huge irony is all this Black Lives Matter stuff is, in fact, the opposite. They believe that Black lives don't matter. So what they do is they create an organization that says Black Lives Matter. And then they get people who don't realize how evil this agenda is buying into the idea. Well, yeah, really, true. Black lives do matter. But that's the opposite of what they mean.
Wasn't it Lord Malik Brown who was on the initial founding of the Open Society's foundation of George Soros?
Yes, he was the original director.
So when we're talking about George Soros and his 187 different NGOs in America that fund Antifa through Act Blue and fund Black Lives Matter through Act Blue, we just busted that, should I say Betsy and her team busted that, by pointing out that Act Blue, when you donate to Black Lives Matter, it goes to Act Blue. Guess what? Almost none of it goes to Black Lives Matter. It goes straight to Democratic candidates. It is a DNC creation. Act Blue. Just look it up. And that's who they tell you to donate to. So it's the obfuscation, the conflation of all this crazy information. They are so good at this that literally I have spent years and years trying to figure this out. And I knew it was true, but I couldn't figure it out, so I would never say it. But now I can honestly say, since the early 1800s, the Rothschilds have controlled the British monarchy, which in fact is a German monarchy. But anyway, they've controlled Britain. Now, when you say that, people will go, you are a crazy conspiracy theory. I dare anyone who had that thought in your head when I just said that to go read the pages that have just been posted on Americans for Innovation, as well as Aim for Truth, and all over. Betsy and her team posted it everywhere. When you finish reading that, if your jaw isn't hanging open, and if you don't say to yourself, anyone who's ever researched this, holy cow, how come we never knew that before? Because these things aren't questionable. This is indictable evidence. It is their own words. It is documents that show that it's true. Directly taken from the record. So you can't really argue.
Sometimes in their own handwriting.
That was the one that blew my mind. That literally Richard C. Walker's Internet of Things list was made by a Rothschild in their own hands years and years and years ago. Mm-hmm. They planned this so much. As you have pointed out with the Empire Press Union, it's a 100-year plan that Cecil Rhodes and his roundtable. Now we know it's more who the teachers of Cecil Rhodes are. N.M. Rothschild, Henry de Worms, and Lord Rosebery. Who would have known? I knew they were connected, but I sure didn't know that they basically took Cecil Rhodes, who was an insane person, and brought him into the Privy Council. So I have only one last question for you, Michael. When the time comes, because you have now revealed the Queen's dirt, she's going to have to offer you either the Order of the Garter or a Knight of Malta. And I just want to know, you know, first off, I wouldn't want the Order of the Garter because I don't want to know what's up underneath the Queen's skirt, okay? And I don't want to be in her privy council because I don't want to be in her privy. the Knights of Malta. I don't want the British one, and I don't want the Catholic one. So I don't want that. So have you decided? Because that's what they do when they get a guy like you who reveals so much. You're going to get a call, and they're going to say, "We're inviting you to be a Knight of Malta. We're going to fly you here, and we're going to treat you like royalty, and then we're going to tell you what stocks to invest in." Are you going to say no? This is what I know. Friends have, very rich friends of mine, used me to investigate the Knights of Malta to see if they were valid. Only super rich people get invited. So only the people who know the dirt of the queen get invited into these peerages, these aristocracies, because the more you know, the higher your initiation is with the queen. So which order do you want? OBE?
Order of the British.
Mike, don't forget you're Scottish. We never take a knee to the Brits.
What I was trying to get at is that these are human responses to, I don't know. I don't know how to answer that question. But what I will say is that I'm a believer in Jesus Christ, and I think that's all I need. I don't need this. I don't need these titles. Because Amen. It's enough to just believe in God and in his son, Jesus Christ.
Well, I know one thing. Some of your British friends right now are really upset by your article because for the first time, their eyes have been opened to their own British nation that they have been completely propagandized on, and they actually believe the nonsense that the BBC spouts. And right. You're absolutely right. The Queen has nothing to do with Jesus Christ, period. The Vatican has nothing to do with Jesus Christ, period. And the Vatican Bank, the Bank of England, they are the antithesis of anything that is Christian or the Golden Rule or anything that we could find as a moral foundation, because they have no morality. They sit around just like the Highlands Forum and decide which patents to steal, weaponized, and how many people they can kill with them. This is insanity, but these people are literally, they don't even know it. In many cases, they are worshiping the devil, and the devil is the lie that this earth is the only place you have. These people are scared of death.
When somebody's born into a Rothschild, that child did not choose that. So they have a choice. And I think with each of the Rothschilds or the Rockefellers or the J.P. Morgan, the Morgans or the Warburgs, when they're born into those families, they didn't choose that. But at some point, they become their own moral being with responsibilities and choices. And I think that's what we need to call these people to, is to make good decisions based on the fact that they are made in the image and likeness of God and have free will. And that free will can choose evil, it can choose good. And let's call them to choose good and stop the evil and stop choosing the evil. That's really what we need to do. That's what we need in this world, is we need some of these people to step up. And at the same time, I think that I called you yesterday. I said, Douglas, could this be as easy as stopping onerous debt? Because it seems like that is the system that these people have recognized is their system, is that when you charge interest to people and they can't pay it back, then you create this mechanism that hasn't stopped. And so if we could stop onerous debt, would we in fact solve this problem?
That would be, yeah, stop usury, onerous debt, odious debt, and stop also then offshore accounts, which are tax-free money. Most of these people don't pay.
And by the way, they're British. When we say offshore accounts, we're talking about British organizations that we're talking about here.
The last ones existing with numbered accounts are all British and Commonwealth nations. And so what we're looking at here is exactly what you said. It could be stopped very simply by adding morality to what is called the worship of mammon, the worship of money. We don't need to worship money. We don't need to have anyone charging you interest on it, making money off of money. That's evil in the economic realm. And we don't need to have people who don't pay taxes when the rest of us do. That alone, for instance, on the stock market, if everybody paid for everything they bought in the stock market, there'd be no other taxes necessary. So what you're saying is right. Morality, and to actually look to what these people that we're trying to reveal claim as their source and their core, which is morality, which they are the exact opposite of. So thank you for your research. It is absolutely amazing. By the way, I only revealed maybe, 10 or 20 of the shocking things that are found in this new expose, this revelation. I would have to say it's one of the greatest works that you and your miners have ever put out. And it just solved for me so many things. And we only touched the surface of it. That was the tip of the iceberg. There's many, many more things that are in that report that are shocking. And when you see them, you're going to realize that it's just a small group of people. And if the rest of us stand up, we can put an end to it.